Island. A similar picture on Thursday again. Again, some of the showers will be heavy and slow moving. And then on Friday, we'll see a very weak weather front spread from west to east, introducing a bit more in the way of cloud. But it does look like it's going to stay relatively warm in the sunshine most places throughout the week.
Thanks a lot, Stav. Now on Radio 4, our new book of the week. The sea has always figured in the life of the writer Philip Hoare. And his latest account, part memoir, part travel log, celebrates that fact. The author has travelled to coastal regions far and wide, but in this first extract, he's closer to home. Lawson Landscaper recalled in The Sea Inside.
In the years since I have come back to it, the house has grown to become part of me. It's held together by memories, even as it's falling apart. Surrounded by ivy and screened by trees, it has become an enclosed world. As I look out from my bedroom window, a blackbird paces out the garage roof, over which a broken willow hangs. Every day here is the same. I'm woken by the cold outside my window, the dark pressing against the glass. I listen to the litany of the forecast, taking me around the coast. Dogger, Fisher, German Bight. Places I'll never visit, but whose names reassure me with their familiar rhythms. I peer through the curtains for a faint sign that the long night is drawing to a close. Outside, I unlock the old brass padlock on the garage door and pull out my bike. I follow the same route. The urgency of my mission leaves the sleeping houses behind. I ride like my mother walked at a furious pace, always trying to keep up with myself. It's December. Sodium lamps soak the streets in a Lucozade haze. Soon I pass out of the suburb sprawl from the land to the sea. Crunching through the shingle along furrows made on earlier visits, I rumble to a halt at the appointed spot. Leaning my bike against the sea wall, I climb over and, no going back now, lower myself in. The water is so clear it scares me. Fish leap up as though they dropped out of the clouds. Everything is rising to the surface, summoned by the light. I push out through the stillness of the standing tide, my hands creating the only ripples. Borne up by the water, I turn briefly on my back, hips held to the sky, before striking back for the shore. I haul myself out, my body pink and steaming like a wet dog. Birds become visible and audible before the sun rises, and the world wakes, a netherworld neither dark nor light, out of time. It's over all too quickly. A frail sun appears over the trees, milky lemon pale, more like the moon. The morning begins. I've forgotten my gloves. I stuff one hand, then the other, in my pockets. A skein of geese fly low over the mud. Curlew call out their names. Curlew? Curlew? Whistling through their arched bills. Gulls clamour. The docks rumble into action. A brightly lit liner sails up the estuary, silent yet so full of people. A distant glimpse of glamour. I race the ship back to port, flushing a lone and indignant duck from the freshwater pond that has gathered at the mouth of a shingle stream. The dawn is replaced by ordinary day. I can see my hands once more. The beach isn't much of a beach. It's really all that's left behind by the slow-moving estuary, more a kind of watery cul-de-sac, fed by two converging rivers. To reach it, I ride along a waterfront set with desultory concrete shelters and backed by common land to which are chained half a dozen horses. Behind stands a post-war housing estate. The path ahead passes through a stand of trees, then gives way to the beach, bordered by a waist-high sea wall with a narrow ledge, just wide enough for a person to walk along. Although the city is in sight, this place can seem haunted on a winter's afternoon, with its bare trees bent back by the prevailing southwesterlies, and its rotting wooden piles, the remains of long decayed jetties. As I ride, my route parallels the forest on the other side of the estuary. A triumvirate of industrial installations stands on the distant shore and now dominates the entire waterline. Oil refinery, chemical plant and power station. Their stacks occasionally burst into life like huge Bunsen burners. The power station's cylindrical chimney, an enormous ship's funnel on a concrete liner fading into pale blue, marks the end of the estuary and the beginning of the sea. Beyond is the tantalizing outline of the Isle of Wight and its fields and downs. A port city relies on its relationship to elsewhere. Perhaps that's why I like it so well, since it does not impose any identity on me. I came back here from habit as much as choice, like the birds that migrate to and from its nondescript shores. The first recorded settlement here was Roman, the port of Clausentum, followed by Anglo-Saxon Hamwick. Southampton translates out of Old English as South Home Town. Scholing, where I live, barely existed until modern times. Its name is a contraction of shoreland. Until the 19th century, this was common land, coursed by a Roman road and scattered with tumuli and cottages. An oddly isolated area, separated from the rest of Hampshire on three sides by rivers and the sea. This suburban sea is a living thing. Everything seems open to the light. The sun forced from under a bank of cloud. A pair of mute swans gliding close to shore. Even on the dreariest days, the most forlorn afternoons, it's never not beautiful here. Black-headed gulls, barely more than pale smears, splash their heads and wings. Unresolved shapes drift by. A distant yacht becomes a silent white smudge. At low tide, the beach is an indecent expanse laid bare by retreat, more like farmland than anything of the sea. An inundated field, as much charcoal as it is sludge. In the uncertain light, the mud takes on new colours, from black to taupe and even a kind of rubbed silver. As I say, it's never not beautiful here. The tide ebbs and the birds assemble, as if someone had laid the table and called them into dinner. Gulls and geese are already working the shoreline, as are the oyster catchers in their white winter scarves. The oyster catcher has been present on Southampton water for centuries, if not millennia. One is graffitied into the 16th century plaster wall of the port's oldest house. Their peeping calls drift over the water as they fly in low formation, wings emblazoned with white streaks. They settle to forage on the tide line. I raise my binoculars. As I watch, they're joined by ringed plovers. As timid as they are, the plovers are unfazed by the ever-present carrion crows that have established themselves here. When the water has fallen back far enough, the crows will swoop on shellfish, rising up to drop them on a stone from a perfectly judged height. If I were to die here on the beach, it would be the crows who picked my bones clean. Around now, the dark-bellied Brent geese appear from Siberia. For them, Southampton water is one big runway. Travelling 3,000 miles in 6 weeks, they're long-haul flyers, built to purpose with compact bodies, sturdy ringed necks and neat dark heads. I hear their rolling honk as they pick their moment to settle. Such an international, modest gathering of birds chooses this part of the shore because it's a fertile patch, fed by a freshwater stream that oozes from the woods. They've been here for generations. They remain loyal to these blackened flats. Northern animals. Like me, Philopatrick. Home lovers. The next morning, shoulders hunched, I push my bike along the beach. I stand over the water and wonder why anyone would want to enter it. The surface, slow and viscous, wrinkles like setting jam. An oily sheen spreads over it. Later, the sea will ice up at the tide line like the salt around the rim of a good margarita. Checking the coast is clear, I pull off my boots and my clothes and wade in. I push through the waves with ice-cold hands until I line up to the distant markers where cormorants perch. I've reached my limit. I turn back to the beach, scrabbling like a goose to find my depth once more. Naked on the sea wall, I give a little dance, singing to myself. I feel happier than I have ever been. Everything stripped away, everything renewed. Just me and the sea. One day, with the sea swollen by a near full moon, I get the feeling I'm not alone. I've just turned back from my farthest point when I'm startled by a sudden whoosh. Directly behind me, barely a yard away, is a huge head with shiny dog-like eyes. A large grey seal, fat and full-grown. I back off. From a distance, they look quite cute, but coming face to face with one in the water is another matter. The seal and I regard each other, equally surprised. He's twice my size, clearly a mature male. He raises his grisly head lugubriously. Kicking out with my feet to persuade the animal to keep its distance, I make for the shore, only to discover that the great beast has followed me, swimming beneath the surface. Scrambling onto the safety of the sea wall and reaching for my clothes, I look down at it. I was right to be apprehensive. Up close, it looks more like a manatee as it hangs there, puffing away quite quizzically, all whiskers and wrinkles, trying to work out what I am, this pale, unsealish creature. I hurry to dress, keeping one eye on my marine companion. His curiosity satisfied, he turns towards the open water and sets off, popping up at intervals as he works his way upstream, before finally moving out of sight. Back home, I catch myself in the mirror on the landing, hung so that my mother could check her makeup before coming downstairs. Now I look in it and wonder who I am. I lie in my narrow bed, listening to the sound of the dark. A vague rumbling drifts over from the docks. Turning off my bedside light, I hear someone call my name, as if the night won't leave me alone. And sometimes I wake in the early hours to hear my mother washing up downstairs, even though she died 6 years ago.
Anthony Caff was reading From the Sea Inside by Philip Hoare. It's been abridged for radio by Catherine Williams, and the producer is Duncan Minchell. Tomorrow, remembering a watery capital, at the same time here on BBC Radio 4. The Shipping Bulletin is next. First, it's sailing by. Thank you. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on